Don't be a homer. Welcome to this audio issue of Porter's Daily Journal, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Issue number 114. Volume number 3, The Biggest Hidden Risk in Your Retirement Account, inside today's Daily Journal. Essay. Don't be a homer. Chinese AI surges. Starbucks brews up its own AI software. A Korean IPO is oversubscribed. Chart of the day. Better than Berkshire. Today's mailbag. Americans have virtually all of their wealth, 94%, exposed to the same major risk. They're not being paid to take this risk. And, in fact, most investors would claim it doesn't even exist. But it certainly does. And right now it poses an existential level of danger for many investors. What's the big risk? America. Most American investors have zero exposure to any other equity market in the world. They only invest here. Today, that's a huge risk. America's current Shiller-Cape ratio, a cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings multiple that smooths a decade of real earnings, sits above 40. The long-run average is 18. American stocks have only been this overvalued twice before in the last 100 years, 1929 and 2000. Neither of those periods worked out well for most investors. My friend Meb Faber has done the most sophisticated research on the impact of global versus U.S.-only investing. He studied every country that ever saw a Cape of 40, the U.S. in the late 1990s, Japan in the 1980s, China and India in 2007. In every case, the subsequent 10-year real returns averaged about zero. Not once, in all of market history, did a country reach a Cape above 40 and go on to deliver even an average decade. The other thing that happens at market extremes is what analysts refer to as concentration. The extreme risk in America's market is not spread evenly. It is concentrated into a handful of names. The 10 largest companies in the S&P 500 now account for roughly 40% of the entire index, a concentration that eclipses the dot-com peak and stands at the highest level in 5 decades. 40 cents of every dollar flowing into passive index funds is now buying only 10 stocks, and virtually all of them track their sales and earnings back to information technology. That is not diversification. That's a massive bet on one investment trend. And that investment trend has shifted from being equity financed to being debt financed. That makes the risks even bigger. The traditional shock absorber Americans have used to mitigate equity risk, bonds, are no longer investable. Since 2020, long-term U.S. Treasury bonds, the asset that was supposed to protect portfolios when stocks fell, have endured their worst bear market in the history of our republic. The Treasury Total Return Index has been underwater for roughly 69 straight months, more than double the previous record. The iShares 20-plus year Treasury Bond ETF, TLT, has fallen 50% from its 2020 peak, a loss deeper than the S&P suffered in 2008. So, the 60-40 stock and bond portfolio that a generation of advisors sold as safe took its worst beating since the 1930s. And that beating isn't over. Add the geopolitical risk, a dollar-based order that half the planet is now openly working to root around, sanctions weaponized, trade blocks redrawn, and the picture is complete. Extreme valuations, extreme concentration, a broken hedge, and a shifting global structure. This is precisely the configuration in which a single country bet can wipe out a generation of investors. And yet, Homer still invests only in America. Meb Faber's numbers reveal why that's such a big mistake. Today, American stocks make up more than half of the world's equity valuation, but the U.S. economy is only about 25% of the world's gross domestic product, GDP. The U.S. stock market isn't merely overvalued. It is overvalued relative to those of other countries by the largest amount ever. Meanwhile, emerging markets hold 85% of the world's people and, by Faber's math, close to 60% of its economic output. Yet emerging market stocks make up only 10% of global stock market value. And Americans own virtually none of those equities. Keeping 100% of your eggs in one country basket opens you to a bona fide existential risk. An investor who put everything into the German stock market in the early 20th century, or the Russian market, or the Chinese market, saw his wealth permanently erased. Not dented, erased. Germany, China, and Russia all have equity markets that went to zero in the last 100 years. But these extreme cases aren't the biggest danger. The biggest risk is what happened to Japan. In 1989, Japan was the second largest economy in the world. It had the largest and most sophisticated financial markets, including the largest global banks. It was the largest stock market on Earth, 41% of the world index, trading at a Cape near 100. Nearly 4 decades later, the Japanese stock market still hasn't gotten back to break-even. That's an entire investment lifetime with zero return and massive real, after inflation, losses. The lesson is that the most expensive, most beloved, most heavily weighted market is exactly the one you least want to concentrate in, and today that market is the United States. But that doesn't matter to Homer. He will only invest in America, or as Faber says, he has home country bias. I began my career in finance as an emerging markets analyst. For years, I traded in Latin America's seven major markets and in Asia ex-Japan. These markets are extremely volatile and there are many pitfalls, but there are also many world-class businesses that trade for peanuts. And there's a very obvious way to sort the wheat from the chaff, a way that dramatically reduces risk and volatility too. And here's the good news. Financial risk has become extremely concentrated in developed markets. Emerging markets have rarely been this attractive relative to developed markets. In fact, going back to 1980, the US and foreign markets have carried nearly identical average CAPE ratios of about 22. The historical valuation premium for owning America has been exactly zero. But today that spread is one of the widest in 40 years. Foreign developed markets trade in the high teens to low 20s. Emerging markets sit around 14. The cheapest quartile of countries trades near 11, roughly 60% below the US, and that cheapest bucket returned about 55% last year. When Faber ran this analysis at the start of 2025, the cheapest large markets on earth were Poland, Colombia, and Brazil. I know from experience that these markets will be volatile. So my first rule for emerging markets is, insist on a high dividend. Make the company hand you real money, every quarter, for your capital. A fat, well-covered payout is the discipline that converts a speculative foreign investment into a successful, low-risk, high-quality investment. But you don't have to take my word for it. The S&P Dow Jones Indexes studied 16 years of emerging market equities, from the end of 1998 through the end of 2014, sorting the entire S&P emerging universe into dividend payers and non-payers. Dividend payers returned an average of 15.79% a year. Non-payers returned 3.52%. Dividend payers are real, investable businesses. The other companies aren't. It really is that simple. And these factors improve with the payouts, in a straight line. S&P sorted the payers by yield into five buckets. The highest yielding quintile returned 24.93% a year. The lowest yielding quintile returned 3.80%. And critically, the highest yielders did not fall into a value trap. They posted the best risk-adjusted returns and the lowest drawdowns of any group. In emerging markets, reaching for yield isn't reaching for risk. At Porter & Company, our emerging market strategy, and our soon-to-be-launched emerging investor, resolves into one sentence. Invest where it's cheap, buy the highest quality you can find, and make sure you get paid. I have a feeling that there's a Homer in most of my subscribers. Invest in Brazil? Porter, you've lost your mind. No, I haven't. Let me show you BB Seguridade Participações S.A., BESI. This is an insurance company, and if you've read my work for any length of time, you know how much I admire the economics of these businesses. But there isn't a single American insurance company that compares, in any way, to BB Seguridade. It has a return on equity of almost 90% a year, making it roughly 3x more profitable than America's best, Kinsale Capital, KNSL. BB Seguridade is the insurance and pensions arm of Banco do Brasil, which is the largest bank in Latin America. It sells insurance policies, and collects commissions for doing so, through the bank's roughly 5,400 branches, giving it access to 90 million plus customers for free. That's a distribution network no rival can replicate, anywhere in the world. Meanwhile, it is structured as a standalone public company and books the earnings of its five underlying insurance ventures by the equity method, much like Berkshire Hathaway does, so it barely carries any capital of its own. That structure gives it the economics of the most elite compounders in the world, companies like Franco Nevada, FNV, S&P Global, SPGI, and McDonald's, MCD. This is a top-quality business in the cheapest quartile of the world. How can I be sure? Because it is a dividend-paying machine. BB Seguridade yields 12% annually and has grown that payout at nearly 20% a year since inception. Yes, it pays in a foreign currency. There's a risk that if the US dollar strengthens, as it has, recently, this dividend yield, in dollars, could fall. But with the payout growing at 20% a year, you're being well paid for that risk. Likewise, because BB Seguridade is in Brazil, it trades at only 8x earnings. For comparison, I happily pay 15x to 25x for top-tier American compounders. I know the vast majority of you will never buy a foreign stock, but I also know that when I started writing about property and casualty insurance stocks 20 years ago, many of you said the same thing. Don't be a homer. Tell me what you think of today's journal. PorterStansberryDirect@gmail.com. F. Porter Stansberry Mantle Oaking, New Jersey, presented by Paradigm Press Records, I didn't think the government would go this far in the last few weeks. The White House has done something I've haven't seen in 50 years of working alongside government institutions. This is bigger than opening federal land or eliminating mining regulations. This is the final trigger to unleash America's 50x mining boom. Three small companies are now at the epicenter of a resource boom that could create more wealth than the San Francisco gold rush and the Texas oil boom. Combined, my research shows they could dominate a $100 billion market within 12 months. I want to give you a shot to get in before this accelerates further. Watch my urgent briefing here. Editor's note: keep in mind, we only accept advertising from publishers we know to offer well-researched ideas vetted by a legal team, excellent customer service, and reasonable refund policies. Paradigm Press is one such partner. We do not, however, under any circumstances make any representations about their investment ideas or strategies, nor will we warrant them as equal to our own. We do recognize that the markets are tempestuous, and, at times, ideas that we may not endorse prove valuable. Three things to know before we go. 1. China's AI usage is booming. Daily AI token consumption in China skyrocketed to over 140 trillion in March 2026, meaning China is processing over half of the world's AI tokens. The performance gap between top-tier US models and leading Chinese models, such as DeepSeek, has narrowed to just 2.7%, according to Boston Consulting Group. 2. Starbucks, SBUX, is using AI to build its own software and dump its vendors. The coffee chain is developing in-house tools, with AI-assisted coding, to replace a Microsoft MSFT system that tracks inventory and an IBM, tool that manages maintenance, according to an internal presentation reviewed by Bloomberg. Starbucks spends roughly $400 million a year on software and is chasing $2 billion in total cost cuts. If Starbucks is successful, expect other companies to follow suit. 3. SK Hynix's US listing is more than 7 times oversubscribed. The South Korean memory chip maker's roughly $24.5 billion ADR sale ranks among the largest US debuts by a foreign company, despite a sell-off that has cut the shares 30% from their late June record. But strong order books don't necessarily translate into positive performance. SpaceX, SPCX, drew more than $350 billion in orders in its recent initial public offering, IPO, but has since given back all of its post-offering gains. The ADRs will begin trading tomorrow on the NASDAQ under the ticker SKHY. Chart of the day. Better than Berkshire Porter & Company's Better Than Berkshire Index, which Porter compiled for complete investor subscribers last year and reallocated in May, is up 10.2% year-to-date compared with its namesake benchmark Berkshire Hathaway, BRK, which has risen 0.16% for the year. Mailbag yesterday, Porter wrote in the journal about the complexities of Obamacare that make it an expensive burden for patients, the government, and everyone involved. 1/6 the cost, Don R. writes. Spot on. My family resides in Mexico. They have a massive public healthcare system there, and it has some similar challenges as Canada, but from what I know, the wait times are not nearly as long. On the topic of private care, we were given a price quote up front by an orthopedic surgeon that included all costs from the point of entering the hospital and exiting it 2 days later with no complications. That also included several at-home, physical therapy sessions. That price was literally 1/6 of the price of the same procedure in a mid-market Midwest city in the USA. The quality of care and outcome in Mexico was excellent. Americans are truly getting ripped off. No free lunch, Susanna R. writes. This needs to be published in every newspaper in the country. While Medicare pays my health cost, I also pay a premium every month plus a supplemental insurance premium. There is no free lunch here, although you would be hard-pressed to find anyone who does not think Medicare is free. Good work, Mr. Stansberry, who wrote this. Keith H. writes, my only question, who actually writes these articles? I don't think Porter writes them. Are these articles written exclusively by AI or only bolstered by AI or hopefully not in any way influenced by AI? BTW, whoever wrote the article did an excellent job. Still looking for an answer as to why you don't respond to letters to you that are very well written and have specific questions which would be instructive if any answers were forthcoming. Porter comment. Geez, that's a backhanded compliment. Great article. Porter couldn't have written it. Lowell. And yes, I wrote every word. Trust me, AI would have never thought of the East German car analogy. Or ever allowed me to criticize Street. Obama. AI is a terrible writer and constantly makes stuff up. I certainly use it for basic research, much like I've used search engines in the past. But the ideas, the sentences, and all of the words are mine. Porter P.S. The day isn't long enough for me to answer every letter. But I'm trying. Please note, the investments in our Porter & Company top positions should not be considered current recommendations. These positions are the best performers across our publications, and the securities listed may or may not be above the current buy-up to price. To learn more, visit the current recommendations page of the relevant service here. To gain access or to learn more about our current recommendations, call our customer care team at 888-610-8895 or internationally at +1-443-815-4447. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue.